Head On Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. A nation of immigrants flexed its muscle again Saturday. Thousands upon thousands of people opposed to Republican plans to criminalize Hispanic workers formed a line more than a mile long, marching from Brooklyn into New York City. The marchers crossed the Brooklyn Bridge carrying signs and banners. One banner read, quote, "I cleaned up Ground Zero." On the other side of the debate, the so-called Minuteman Project returned to the desert area of the U.S.-Mexican border on Saturday. The Minutemen are anti-Hispanic people who think Hispanic workers are more dangerous than Osama bin Laden. With the immigration debate taking center stage, George Bush used his radio address Saturday instead to press for more tax cuts. Bush said the American economy is growing thanks to those tax cuts.
Since 2001, the tax relief we delivered has left $880 billion in the hands of American workers and small businesses and families like yours. And you've used that money to help produce more than 4 years of uninterrupted economic growth.
Bush failed to note that on Friday, U.S. auto parts manufacturer Delphi announced plans to eliminate 28,500 workers and asked a bankruptcy judge to eliminate their labor contracts. A sorry end to a sorry situation Saturday in Rome. A toddler who was snatched last month in a high-profile kidnapping was found dead Saturday. That, according to Italian media and the state-run RAI news agency, the body of Tommaso Onofri was found near Parma in northern Italy about a month after he was taken from his family's home. And American journalist Jill Carroll, correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, says that she was forced to participate in propaganda, namely making a video for her captors, as a condition of her release. She said, quote, "During my last night in captivity, my captors forced me to participate in a propaganda video. They told me they would let me go if I cooperated. I was living in a threatening environment under their control and wanted to go home alive. I agreed." A U.S. military helicopter went down Saturday southwest of Baghdad. That, according to the United States Military Public Affairs Office, the office said the aircraft was conducting a combat air patrol. The status of the crew is unknown. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Hundreds of people rallied in downtown New Orleans on Saturday demanding a postponement of the city's mayoral election. The election is currently scheduled for April the 22nd. Hundreds of thousands of residents, of course, were driven out of the city by Hurricane Katrina. Many of them have not returned. A number of individuals are concerned that fair elections can't be had under the current situation with so many of the residents disenfranchised and unable to cast a vote. The Democrats used their Saturday response to George Bush's radio address to send Senator John Kerry out to speak in Spanish. He said that the Democratic Party deserves credit for a new immigration bill that doesn't, quote, criminalize immigrants, unquote. Kerry claimed the Democrats stood up to the Republicans who saw immigration reform as a chance to punish immigrants. Another U.S. Marine is dead in Iraq. A Marine died Saturday from his wounds as a result of a Friday attack. the Marine was part of the 228 Brigade combat team and was wounded, the government will only say, due to enemy action in the notorious Al Anbar province. Also in Iraq Saturday, at least 10 gunmen shot a Shiite tribal chief and four male relatives near Balad Ruz as they were driving home from a funeral procession. One of the family members was a policeman with the Bakuba Intelligence Service. On Friday, Condoleezza Rice said that the Bush administration had made thousands of mistakes. Now she's backing up on that. She said on Saturday that the United States made possibly thousands of mistakes, but she was only speaking figuratively. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Everybody, welcome to 4th Estate Radio for April Fool's Day. I do believe it is still up there. Bruce, how you going, man?
Yes, it is. We have April Fool's here for two more hours. And, John, I just wanted to let you know that it looks like the Taco Bell company is going to buy the Liberty Bell.
I'm sorry, man. I didn't quite catch that. Hey, there you are, man. You were a little quiet on my end, but it seems to have all tidied up. Thank you.
Okay.
Repeat that statement, please.
I said it looks like the Taco Bell Corporation is going to buy the Liberty Bell. Have you heard about this?
This is an April Fool's joke, right?
No. I wouldn't dare do that, John. Would I? Or would I? I'm going to make you check during the break because I'm not going to tell you.
Well, I was about to say something I can't say on air, but you can't do that to me. By the way, I'm John Fox, Sydney, Bruce Burge, North Carolina. We're chatting at the new chat room at headonradionetwork.com and blogging at 4th Estate Radio, which I didn't really do this morning because, well, I was editing lots of interview stuff. So tell me about Taco Bell, please, Bruce.
Okay, yeah, that wasn't April Fool's. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. And you know what? I'm just going to warn you now because the bottom line is that throughout this radio program, I'm going to do April Fool's jokes, John. You know, so be warned. You know, you're not going to know for sure if it's real news or if it's fake news tonight.
Well, I was waiting for a bogus news story in the newscast. I kind of was expecting Bob to get up to naughtiness today, but I guess he was just... He's too much of a pro, man. We can't get him to mess around like that.
I know.
I think
and you
just
know
jinxed
what?
Us for the rest of the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is real radio for real people. We're glad to have you aboard. We're chatting. Thank you, Tom Hartman, for everything that you've done for us, but we now have a new chat room at headonradionetwork.com. Tell us about the chat room, John.
Well, it's new. It's looking kind of full. I'm peering in because, as you know, I'm normally banned from the chat during the show because it just gets me too off balance. But you know, you go into headonradionetwork.com, click on the chat room link, and there's a quick little sign up thing. It's an email address and your username and a thing, and right after that, you can get straight in and dive into the pool. Our good friend Liberal Me is the chief cheese in there, and we got. The cheap cheese. Where did that come from? Sorry, Peter. Anyway, and just like we said, we were using Tom Hartman's chat room as our home there for a while, and we're growing bigger and bigger every week, and we kind of felt like we were taking things over, but we did you know, grab the services as well from our good friend Benedict at Large, who's one of the guys from that chat room who's come in to also help keep an eye on ours and keep those trolls at bay. And now we got a really big show today. As far as we got
huge,
we got a lot of stuff to talk about, man. And we're going to get into what happened with the censure hearings yesterday, or what didn't happen, or who didn't show up. But in the second hour, I've got an interview with historian Humphrey McQueen. And he gave a lecture this week, which will be airing straight after this show. And I got him for a few minutes afterwards before he had a chance to go and grab a bite to eat and a drink. And had some very, very interesting things to say about activism and, you know, kind of the state of the world at the moment. And his lecture was called, "If It's Not Fascism, What Is It?" I'm not necessarily sure he came up with an alternative, but there's some very interesting bits of information. And he talked about one of my favorite bug objects, Coca-Cola.
Ah, yes. Coca-Cola, the Central American exploitative, you know, yes. I'm really looking forward to that. But you know something? I wanted, before we get too far along, I had today, John, I attended my county Democratic annual meeting and was able to really to talk to a bunch of local progressives and shake some hands and get the word out there about Head On Radio Network. But I really was able to also sit down with my congressman, who was Brad Miller, the 13th District congressman from North Carolina, who, by the way, sends his regards and is behind this 100% in what we're doing here. And if you're out there listening, Brad, Congressman Miller, excuse me, if you're out there listening, Congressman Miller, glad to have you aboard. Stick around. We've got a really great show in store for you. This is a progressive radio for real people here, you know, folks. You know, John and I, we're working stiffs. We do this because for the love of it.
So
glad to have you aboard.
We do it not only just for the love of it, but I don't know, it's now become kind of, I don't know, a driving force to the reason that I get up every day, you know, because no one else is out there is doing it aside from the few, and we're small guys out of that few, but we're getting bigger every week, and it's all good, man. And
absolutely.
I'm really impressed with what you did yesterday. You know, you emailed me, you've been out there hitting the street as you usually do, but this time you're going out and trying to get us listeners one by one, which that's a mammoth task.
Well, you know, if we're gonna sway this sway the country back to the party of common sense, then the only way to do that is to create if the media doesn't want to cooperate, then we have to be the media, and that's what we're doing. So. But I just wanted to throw that out there, and you know, anyone new tonight, you know, welcome aboard to Fourth Estate Radio. You can check us out. Also, we're blogging where, John?
We're blogging at two different places: fourthestateradio.com and at the headonradionetwork.com. Or it's actually headonradionetwork.com. Drop the. And if you sign up to the Head On Radio Network blog, you can you can choose there to get automatic updates. So every time it happens on that blog, you get a little email telling you to stop up and have a look.
Whoa, that was say that again, John. If you sign up, you can send an email. What was that?
No, the blog will send you an email to tell you something special is happening. You know, that subscription kind of thing.
Oh,
anyway,
okay, so you get special posts. That's great.
You know, well, let's move on, man. We've done enough housekeeping, aside from the fact that Ben Birch runs the stream and archives the show at the White Rose Society, and he's almost done with his fundraiser, so throw him a bone, and he can be finished for this 6 months or whatever it is. Mate, I don't know where you want to go first. Do you want to get censure, or do you want to get into Savage?
I want to get, first, before we do anything else, I hate to do these sensationalism stories, but I am here in North Carolina. And here in North Carolina, we have some strange stuff out there in the western part of our state, okay? And, you know, the strange stuff that has happened this week, and I'm just going to read this to you, John. And you tell me if this is real news or fake news, okay?
Okay.
Three men have been arrested on charges of performing castrations on apparently willing participants in a sadomasochistic dungeon in a rural house, authorities said Friday. It's extremely bizarre, District Attorney Michael Bonoffri said in a telephone interview. It's incredible the amount of ways that people can find to run afoul of the law. Sheriff's investigators said Richard Ciara, Danny Reeves, and Michael Mendez admitted performing at least 8 surgeries, including castrations and testicle replacements, on 6 consenting clients over the past year. None of the three is licensed to practice medicine.
What? Okay.
This
I understand.
Happened. Go ahead.
This is completely sick and disgusting. I understand the concept of castration, but testicle replacement? What exactly is that? But I really don't want to know, because this is just disgusting. It is so disgusting. And
These people did this voluntarily. Very wrong. Detectives who searched the home found medical supplies that included scalpels, sutures, bandages, anesthetic, and artificial replacement testicles, sheriff's officials said. This happened in Haywood County in western North Carolina. And ladies and gentlemen, this is not an April Fool's. This really happened. Welcome to Bush World.
It's a weird. I feel like it sounds like something out of an alley. No.
Yeah, John, you're breaking up pretty hard there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think we're getting ready to take a break here in a second, but that's one of those stories. We try to toss it out there, but.
Yeah,
this is Fourth Estate Radio. I'm Bruce Birch. That's John Fox. We'll be back in just a moment.
I'm just a kid.
I'm 6.
I'm 9.
I'm 4.5.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Cause mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
right. This is Fourth Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch. My pal John Fox is down there in Sydney, Australia. And we already have a caller on line one, our good friend Luke from Knoxville, Tennessee. Luke, how are you doing tonight, buddy?
Hi, John. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, mate.
How's it going over there?
Oh, fine. Wish the temperature make up its mind whether it's spring or still winter.
Well, it is that time of the year, my friend.
I know.
I'm on the same latitude as you are, so I can relate.
No, I was telling Bob, the thing that's got me in this last day or two is listening to the right-wingers on this thing on Jill Carroll. They sound upset that she wasn't beaten and tortured. I mean, it's sort of like, well, she said, well, they treated her humanely. And they're acting like, how dare they?
Well,
these guys like on Imus or on Hardball or whatever.
Sure.
These guys out there, they're just upset that how dare she say she was treated like a human being. Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, that goes against the U.S. policy of killing journalists.
That's what I mean. I mean, I'm surprised it's like that. They weren't going to be satisfied till she was, you know, hung up by her ankles or had the dogs on her or who knows what. It's just amazing to hear them, you know, it's like, but something's wrong with her if they treated her nice. I don't mean nice, you know what I mean. Just as a human being.
One of the things I find interesting also, and this is, you know, I was having dinner with someone the other night, and we were discussing this very issue, and one of the things that I think is really interesting is that, okay, well, first of all, just as an aside, Michael Berg, the father of Nick Berg, who was beheaded,
mm-hmm.
is actually running for Congress now.
Yeah.
But we may talk about that later. But Nick, you know, was beheaded, and there was that whole spate of beheadings that happened in that really short period of time,
mm-hmm.
and then no more. And which really makes you kind of wonder, you know, if these folks... If this was their normal method of
it makes you wonder if the people around them said, quit this. You know, own people were saying, you know, this is bringing too much heat too much too fast on us.
Could very well have been true.
But
I wonder about Jill. Now, Jill apparently came back out in the news media this evening or today, at some point today, and said that they forced the kidnappers forced her to say good things about them.
Well, but I mean, you know, I mean, they forced her to make a video that was made that apparently, you know, criticizes the U.S. But it's like, I'm sorry, these are people holding guns to your head. Yes, I'll make it. I mean, you won't. I wouldn't hold anything serious anybody made like that. You know what I mean?
She was backtracking on the propaganda video, not the fact that she said that it was treated humanely.
That's what I mean. That they made her make, and it's like, well, God. What do you expect her to do, say no? I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, I mean, like you say, these are guys walking around with scimitars and who knows what. You know what I mean? It's like, do you want to make a video? Fine, we'll make a video. Thank you.
And Bob just pops into our little production chat here. You know, they're not making any noise about McCain. I'm trying to follow what Bob's saying here. But, you'd think that the right wing – you know, they're going to do their game, but, you know, McCain was a tortured guy, you know.
I tell you what, he has been the biggest disappointment of anything, because the thing that bugs me the most is here's a guy who they didn't even go after him. They went after his family, the right wing, and now he's there kissing their butts.
Yeah, and here Bob just clarified to me that McCain admits that he talked and he gave up information. Of course you're going to do that.
Yeah.
And I imagine that some of the information that he even gave was false just to try and save his own hide in the long run, I would reckon.
We were talking about it one time with my friends. I said, hell yes, I'm going to tell things. I'll make up anything I can. You know what I mean?
I said, there's
truth and what's a lie. I'm going to tell them, you know.
And that's just it. And it's been proven time and time and time and time again that torture itself does not work for interrogations.
No.
You know,
I mean,
like, because
you know what it is to have them quit.
Exactly. You know, it's about the removal of pain.
But, the one they were talking the other day about, why is she wearing I think it was the burqa she was wearing. It's like, dummies, everybody, all the women over there pretty much are dressed like that. If you don't, you don't go around. You know, I mean, they were criticizing the way she was dressed. It's like, well, you're trying to blend in. You're not wearing a red, white, and blue T-shirt.
Well, and didn't they drop her off, like, on a, didn't they drop basically drop her off on a street corner?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously they were trying to allow her to have a chance to get to some safety. And if they had stuck her out there in the middle of the street corner in Western clothes, well, hello, crosshairs.
I mean, you know, it's like they just sound disappointed. I mean, when you hear them talk now, they just think it was just so unfair, you know, I mean, that apparently, you know, like I say, that they treated her humanely. It's just amazing to listen to it. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, God forbid she comes back and actually says something.
Yeah, that's just it.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. They can't control her like they did was the Army Private Lynch and all this. You know what I mean? So she's going to get her story out quick, where before, you know, some of these others, they've been able to keep them under wraps for 2-3 weeks till they get their propaganda already set up. So,
Sorry,
man. It's amazing the lengths that this administration has gone to you know, get in the way of the media actually telling story to be that check and balance. I mean, we've seen this all the time. So, you know, I bet we're hoping that these cappers would have killed her, because then they could have used that as a scare tactic in the propaganda. But you know what? It's not going to play. And I have a feeling she won't play either. And I reckon that we're going to end up having one heck of a story coming out, you know, very, 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 very shortly. So, you know, Luke, we're coming up on a break, and I really thank you for calling in.
That's okay. I want to get on in early before you got some guests, and I know you've got some tape stuff coming up, so wanted to get it on out of the way.
Well, we look forward to you ringing every week, man, and we'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Howdy. Thanks. Bye.
All right. We didn't even have that on our list of stuff that we were going to talk about this week, Bruce, but, I mean, that is a huge thing. You know, we have seen more journalists killed in this short time of this war than in all of Vietnam. And I reckon that this all plays into that. So we're going to a break. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. We're blogging and chatting at headonradionetwork.com. And Bruce and I will be back in just a bit.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show, where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
McGruff, the crime dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
It tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write...
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
Introducing Pablo Escobar, trained at the School of the Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood.
Everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox here in Sydney, and my buddy Bruce Birch up there in North Carolina. Bruce, we're going to move on to Centreville, are we?
We're going to move on to Centreville. I'm going to tell you something, John. Before we get too far into this, and I know how you feel as we talked beforehand, but you know, I want you to express this on air also. How crappy was it that Russell Feingold was hung out to dry yesterday in the Capitol for standing on principle and doing the right thing?
Yeah, and where was Kennedy and the rest of them?
Oh. You know?
I've been beside myself since yesterday, and you know, we talked before where I rang up to go to bat for Bob for having gone to the mat for the Democrats just the day before. And it lays out a lot of the problems that we're facing here. But why don't you take it away with, you've got some audio for us on what went down yesterday, don't you?
I do have some audio. And, you know, what have we come to as a nation when we have to turn to folks who were on the dark side, if you will, or self-described as being on the dark side to defend our civil liberties? You know, I guess that just blows me away. I know that we have the censure hearings were pretty mind-boggling and kind of shocking. We do have some audio, but the first clip that we have is actually the opening statement by John Dean, of course, of Watergate fame, who was called by Russ Feingold to talk about, what happened during Watergate and why the cover-up. So, Bob, if you want to go ahead and roll the John Dean clip one.
My qualifications for addressing the committee,
I that.
Think, were alluded to by the senator from Texas, who's no longer here, and I think it's important that the committee sometimes hear from the dark side, that those of us from that perspective can add some insights that might not otherwise be available to a body like this. And I must say, I think I have probably more experience firsthand than anybody might want in what can go wrong and how a president can get on the other side of the law. Obviously, I refer to my experience at the Nixon White House during Watergate. In addition to my firsthand knowledge of what can go wrong in a White House, I've spent the last some three decades studying presidents past and present, and I'm not here to sell a book today, but I did write a book that gave me additional insight, and indeed, the book I am going to be publishing soon that mentions the senator from Texas will not be out till this summer. So, no president that I can find in the history of our country has really ever adopted a policy of expanding presidential powers for the sake of expanding presidential powers. And I think that's what we have going on in this presidency. It was the announced objectives of the Bush-Cheney presidency from the very outset, and it has been pursued at every turn, on every issue, on any matter from a dispute with the General Accountancy Office to now how they pursue their NSA program. Rather than come to Congress and even seek approval, they want to do it without approval. That's very unique. I don't. For example, Abraham Lincoln, in his very strenuous violations of many laws and constitutional provisions, came back to Congress and asked for permission. That isn't the case here. We have a president who doesn't want to do that. In looking at the issue of censure per se, I'm sure the committee, this committee in particular, is intensely aware of what happened during the Clinton impeachment, when it was well debated. It was debated by members of the House and the Senate. It was debated by constitutional scholars, political commentators, And the common denominator that came out of that debate, I think, was that everybody basically agreed that censure is a political proceeding. I looked at the historical collection that I could find on that issue, and it seems that those who've looked at historical, some four clear instances with John Quincy Adams, Andrew Jackson, John Tyler, James Buchanan, those are the four leading precedents for censure, all were motivated by partisan political activity. I find no constitutional question that a president has, or excuse me, that the Congress has the power to grant impeachment. I've read debates on both sides. I read a lot of the material during the Clinton impeachment. This committee is very familiar with Professor Michael Gerhardt's work, and he certainly, looking from everything from provisions within the Constitution, where the Houses and Senate are able to keep their own journals, to the First Amendment, and said there is just no prohibition in the Constitution that would prohibit a censure. Now, why a censure is a better question. To me, this is not really and should not be a partisan question. I think it's a question of institutional pride of this body, of the Congress of the United States, that what's happened is over the last, particularly since 1994, and it didn't happen during the Clinton impeachment, or excuse me, the Clinton presidency, but there has been a growing tendency, and I started my career on Capitol Hill, to let the president do what he wants and to have virtually no oversight. I can tell you from the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue, that's very important to presidents. They take note of that when they're not being called to the mat. They push the envelope as far as they can. Richard Nixon was proud in throwing down the gauntlet at this body and felt it important that he do so. So I think impeachment is premature. I think censure, which need not be political by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, if it carries too much political baggage, it can always be a resolution that is worded in some softer terms to make clear that the Congress itself is not waiving its power to step into these issues. Because at some point, as I track the constitutional law, and I put some of that in my formal statement, there is a waiver that occurs. And a censure appropriately worded is the answer to that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dean.
And that clip was John Dean, who is the former White House counsel to Richard Nixon, who, of course, was, you know, had articles of impeachment handed down, and then he resigned before it came to trial. John, yes. It sounded to me as if Dean was trying to present himself now as presidential historian.
Well, and I think he was doing a bloody good job at it, too, man.
You know, he apparently has done his homework on censure.
Well, yeah, I would hope, you know, I would hope he has. And, you know, I find it interesting that you have a guy who was counsel for the, you know, last president found to be doing things, well, shall we say, really illegally. And Nixon stepped down before he was able to be held accountable.
Exactly.
And I don't think Bush has the same brains.
Well, I don't even know if it's about brains. It's so much, I mean, I would agree with you to a certain degree. But I also think that this president sees himself as being above the law. I mean, he really does.
Absolutely.
All of his actions, from the torture to, I mean, on last week's radio program that I did, All Things Reconsidered, we had Matthew Rothschild, who laid out in a 5-minute statement, he laid out the grounds for impeachment, which included 6 or 7 different charges. You know, not the least of which is the illegal war. You know, but this guy, he really believes. I think he really believes that he is above the law. I mean, he's a true believer, I'm believing.
Well, yeah, and I found it interesting that where he made the statement that presidents will push the envelope unless they're brought into check. And this, you know, hillbilly has not been brought into check for anything. Sorry to take a term used in that little video. And if you haven't seen Ha 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 America at the Sundance Film Festival site, you're missing out on something very, very important. But, you know, as long as we continue to let these people go unchecked, they're going to continue to try and push things further. And, I mean, these guys have already gone past the point of being criminal. So, you know, I mean, I think he's laid out a very important point. You know, even if we don't get to the point of impeachment, censure should be a nonpartisan, nonpolitical thing where the Congress is holding the president accountable for his actions, his deeds, and whether or not he's doing things like going through the proper channels in which to spy on people.
Exactly. Yeah, I have a couple other clips, and in the next clip, John, that we have, what I wanted to do was to do an exchange. This is a two-minute clip, and this is an exchange. This is Feingold and Dean, clip number two. And let me set this up. Feingold and Dean, clip number two, Bob. And this is a two-minute exchange between Russ Feingold and John Dean, and they're talking about the whole situation with the president. Bob, if you want to go ahead and play that.
Versions of executive power used. That to me suggests something inappropriate with regard to conduct concerning the role of Congress in the executive. Mr. Dean, this morning a blogger named Glenn Greenwald wrote about a 1969 article from Time magazine that quotes then Attorney General John Mitchell giving reassurances about new surveillance powers. Here's what Mitchell said. Any citizen of the United States who's not involved in some illegal activity has nothing to fear whatsoever. Now, as Greenwald points out, those statements are remarkably similar to what the President and the Attorney General have said about the NSA program, and people who actually don't know anything about the program other than what has been reported publicly have repeated those assurances. I've heard it from some people back home. This program is very narrow. It only covers people who have reason to believe they are part of Al-Qaeda, etc. Now, I have no reason to believe that the administration is not telling the truth in this case, but certainly our history has taught us, as Ronald Reagan famously said, trust, but verify. And that is why, after the abuses of the Nixon era, Congress passed FISA, so that a secret but independent court could evaluate government wiretapping requests and make sure that these kinds of assurances are actually true. Would you say a bit, finally, to comment on the parallels here? Do you agree that testing these kinds of public assurances are exactly why we have the FISA law and why the administration must comply?
I believe the Attorney General, John Mitchell, made that statement shortly before the Keith case argument, in which the Justice Department relied on King George III, in which the court was very prompt to remind the Justice Department that one of the things we fought for in the revolution was against warrantless surveillance. That message got through, and they pulled back for a while.
They pulled back for a while.
Yeah, for a while. This is why you have to constantly be checking these people. Otherwise, they're going to do whatever they damn well please.
Yes, they are. You know, and that's what's most troubling is that it doesn't seem to be, actually I should say, there does seem to be a pattern of behavior on the right with these kinds of actions, doesn't there, John?
Yeah, I mean, everything that's being said is so right, you know. I'm sorry, I keep getting stuck on the fact that this was all going on, and none of the Democrats were there. You know, and they're laying out the case very, very plainly for the fact that these people are breaking the law, and we have the FISA courts in place to give them a valve to go to say, we need to go to these somewhat extraordinary measures to watch this person, and this is why we think so. And they don't even have to do it straight away. But these idiots will just do whatever they want until we tell them they can't.
Until we tell them they can't.
Who's going to tell them, though, if the Democrats aren't in the freaking room, John?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. This is why, and I think when we get to McQueen's interview later, some of the same questions are asked. Why is it that in France the students go and take to the streets by the millions because they've just had their rights and everything, stripped away from them as far as workers to become second-class citizens, very much in the same way that they're pushing to make the Latin Americans in America like a separate worker class with less rights.
And the unionists and the union workers in Australia. That they just would, mate.
I was telling you earlier, before we got on air, I've been doing a little bit of work telling you about what's been happening, here with the new industrial reform laws. Now, they just finally actually went into effect on Monday. Almost immediately, 9 a.m. Monday morning, union workers started being fired from their jobs with no recourse whatsoever, and then a lot of them were being asked to be rehired under what they call casual contract labor for anywhere between 20 and 40% less money than they were making before.
Sounds like Bush World has come to Australia.
It's insane, man. It's absolutely insane. And, the whole time that they were pushing this thing, which the Howard government spent multiple millions of taxpayer money to promote this policy, they said nothing will happen. Your rights will stay the same. We're just making, more opportunities, right? And it's that idea of, we have right to work states in America. Well, it's that same thing here. Nationally, you now have the right to work for a whole lot less. And the middle class in Australia has just, with the drop of a pen, has been completely and utterly screwed.
I totally agree. Excuse me.
And this is purely importing American policy here. This is purely importing this American policy over here. I mean, there's no other way to say it, And you have one more clip that we're going to get to after we come back from the break.
We listened to the two guys doing the right thing. Now we're going to listen to one of the rabid right-wing Republicans talking about justifying the Bush administration's actions. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch. John Fox is over there, down there under. And we'll be right back.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more.
Hi, I'm Janice Ian. Do you remember how excited you were at the start of summer every year, and how the summer just started to drag on after a few months, and you couldn't wait to get back to school, see your old friends, make new friends, get new books and a new locker and a clean slate? Well, you should have been excited about music class, too, because that was a special room where you went to sing, perform with your friends, and learn all kinds of interesting stuff about great composers, instruments, different kinds of music and songs. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They helped to spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them, and make sure they get involved with music in school and in their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Sure, my name is John Fox in Sydney, Australia, and Bruce Birch is on the other side of the planet up in North Carolina. Bruce, where are we moving on to now? You said we had the rights, and now we're going to the wrongs?
Yeah, we had the rights, and now we're going to the far rights. The rights, and now we're going to the wrongs. Yes. Yes, actually, Bob, if you want to go ahead and run that clip, let's just take it without introduction.
Really do believe the president has robust authority when it comes time to fighting a war. Now, Mr. Dean, this is a little bit different than Watergate. Did you ever believe there was a legal basis for the president of the United States to break into the Democratic National Headquarters?
No.
You knew you were committing a crime. That wasn't the debate, whether or not it was legal or not. You just chose to break the law.
I couldn't read the Commander-in-Chief Clause the way it's being read today.
That's different. That's different. You read it differently, but nobody read the Constitution to say that Richard Nixon and you could break into somebody's private office and steal.
I don't think when we talk about
Watergate. Isn't that different? Isn't there a big difference between knowingly breaking the law, burglarizing somebody's office, and having a real debate about where authority begins and ends?
Nixon didn't authorize the break-in.
Oh, he didn't. Okay. So, did you authorize it?
No, I did not.
Did you know about it?
No, I did not.
Did he ever know about it?
After it happened.
Okay, so then he covered up a crime that he knew to be a crime, right?
Senator, it might be important for you to know that
Did he cover up a crime that he knew to be a crime?
Senator Graham, let him answer the question.
He covered it up for national security reasons.
Give me a break.
He covered it up
to save his hide.
No, sir. You're showing you don't know that subject very well.
What's the national security reason to allow a president to break into the other side's political opponent's office?
The cover-up didn't really concern itself
what
with
enemy
it.
Are we fighting when you break into the other
Senator,
side's office?
Senator, if you let me answer, I'll give you some information
please.
You might be able to use.
Please.
He covered it up not because of what had happened at the Watergate, where I think he would have cut the re-election committee loose. He kept them covered up because of what had happened while they were at the White House, which was the break-in into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office. And that, he believed, was a national security activity.
So he had the view that you could plot a crime in the White House and that made it national security. That's absurd. That's why he got
impeached. That isn't what I said.
That's why you went to jail. So let's get
I did
to
not
the reality.
Go, well.
Mr. Chairman, could please, you know, I hate to
let me answer
the question.
Wait, just a minute, Senator.
This is my 5 minutes.
I'd
like to use it like
I
see fit.
So far, I asked Senator Graham to desist once, and after that, I think Mr. Dean's been defending himself pretty well.
Great. And my point is that this
is... That is with respect to answering the question.
Thanks,
not
sir.
Not necessarily as to the substance.
Thank
Go ahead,
you.
Mr. Graham.
My point is this is apples and oranges. That anybody who believes that Richard Nixon was relying on some inherent authority argument to allow himself to break into a political opponent is recreating history. This debate is about when does the power of the president begin and end in a time of war. This is an honest, sincere debate. We've got a Supreme Court case that says the force resolution, the Hamdi case, allows the president to put someone in jail as an enemy combatant in spite of the fact that Section 1401 of the U.S. Code, 18 U.S.C. 4001, citizens shall be imprisoned or otherwise detained by the United States except pursuant to an act of Congress. And Justice O'Connor said the force resolution authorizing force in Afghanistan met that requirement. And she also said inherent to fighting a war is putting people in prison who are part of the enemy. The problem here is that we got a pre-existing statute, Mr. Fine, and you're right. If you take this argument too far, what the president is saying, Mr. Addington is saying, makes me wonder if you can have the UCMJ. Could the Congress ever do anything in a time of war to regulate the land and naval forces? The answer to me is yes, the Congress can. Yes, the president can go after the enemy. The middle ground, to me, is the Congress and the president working together. And they did act in good faith. I just disagree with them.
Thank you, Senator Graham. Senator Leahy.
Can you respond to that?
Do you care to respond to
that? I would only respond that the very opening premise of the senator's assumption that Nixon had somehow ordered a break-in based on anything in the historical record, and based on anything in my knowledge, it's just dead wrong.
He condoned it.
He did not know about it, Senator. It's hard to condone something you don't know about.
Once you know about it, he condoned
then,
it.
As I told you, he had a totally different agenda for covering it up.
And thank you, Bob, for running that clip. We wanted to run that before the top of the hour because we do have some other stuff going on in the second hour of this program. John, you still with me?
Yeah, man, and I just find it amazing that the right wing's going after Nixon. I mean, talk about opportunists.
Well, and you know, what blows my mind is that, you know, they talk about, on the one hand, they're talking about, you know, that, you know, the Supreme Court found that, you know, you can take prisoners in war. But what they're not telling you is that they're torturing these prisoners. They're not following the Geneva Conventions. They are operating outside of the law of the international community.
Well, yeah, and okay, let's also move on to this thing about, you know, presidential powers in a time of war. Now, last time I checked, the only part of the government that's allowed to declare war is Congress, and they never did, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so you know, we got a little bit of a problem going on there. But I'm always amazed at how these people will even turn on their own just to try and make some sort of points. Now, I'm sorry, Nixon's somebody that these people, like people like in my family, who actually believe that Nixon was never a crook. Nixon was doing the right thing. And, ooh, I think we're coming up on a break. So, hey, man, we should pick this up after the news, I reckon. But actually, right when we come back, we're going to probably sneak right into that interview, maybe. And we're going to come back to this because, well, we'll figure it out. We'll be back after this break, and we'll do something. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving.
Hmm.
And I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And on Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid. On a day when the debate seemed focused on immigration, George W. Bush used his Saturday radio address to press for more tax cuts. Bush said the American economy is growing rapidly thanks to his tax cuts.
Since 2001, the tax relief we delivered has left $880 billion in the hands of American workers and small businesses and families like yours. and you've used that money to help produce more than 4 years of uninterrupted economic growth.
Unstated in Bush's remarks were the fact that U.S. auto parts manufacturer Delphi announced on Friday its plans to eliminate 28,500 workers, also asking a bankruptcy judge to eliminate their labor contracts as well as contracts with General Motors. A nation of immigrants did flex its muscle again on Saturday. Thousands upon thousands of people opposed to Republican plans to make criminals out of Hispanic workers formed a line more than a mile long in New York City. The marchers crossed the Brooklyn Bridge carrying signs and banners. One banner read, among others, quote, "I cleaned up Ground Zero." On the other side of the debate, the so-called Minuteman Project went back into the U.S.-Mexican border on Saturday. The Minutemen are an anti-Latino group who thinks Hispanic workers are more dangerous than Osama bin Laden. Freed journalist Jill Carroll is taking a great deal of heat. She said on Saturday that she was forced to participate in a videotape as a condition of being released after being held by Iraqi so-called insurgent kidnappers for some 3 months in Iraq. She said that the remarks she made on tape were not her true beliefs. She said they told me, quote, if they would let me go if I cooperated. I was living in a threatening environment under their control and wanted to go home alive. I agreed, unquote. Families in the United States are awaiting news following the crash of a U.S. military helicopter that went down Saturday southwest of Baghdad. According to the U.S. military, quote, the aircraft was conducting a combat air patrol. The status of the crew is unknown. No further information is being given out pending investigation. Hundreds of people joined a downtown rally on Saturday. They were calling for a postponement of New Orleans' mayoral election. It's currently scheduled to be held on April 22nd. A coalition of civil rights, political, and entertainment leaders says that until provisions are made for those city residents living elsewhere to vote, no election should be held and that any election that was held would be, in fact, a sham. The coalition includes the ubiquitous Reverend Jesse Jackson, the Rainbow Push Coalition, the NAACP, the Urban League, Al Sharpton, Bill Cosby, John Legend, and Mayor Ray Nagin. A U.S. Marine died on Saturday from wounds he suffered in an attack in Al Anbar province on Friday, according to the U.S. Marine Corps. The only thing the Marine Corps would say was that he was killed as a result of, quote, enemy action. That brings to 2,327 the number of U.S. troops killed in George Bush's Mideast War. This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Planet Check. Planet Check. Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Massachusetts Senator John Kerry says it's because of the Democratic Party that that Hispanic immigrants have not been criminalized under harsh Republican proposed legislation. In the Senate Democrats' weekly radio response to George Bush's address, Kerry said in Spanish, no less, that his party stood up to the Republicans who saw immigration reform as a chance to punish immigrants. At least 57 people died earlier this week in a cruise ship capsizing near Bahrain in the Persian Gulf. According to Bahrain's Interior Ministry, this Saturday, the boat did not have permission to sail. Government records show the boat was allowed to float as a docked restaurant only, according to Colonel Tariq Hassan. 68 people have been rescued. One remains missing. All 19 people aboard a small aircraft that crashed early near Rio de Janeiro were found dead on Saturday, according to police in Brazil. The plane had disappeared from radar screens. Rescuers had searched in a mountainous area east of the city. 17 passengers and two crew members took off about 5:20 p.m. That was 7:20 p.m. Friday's Eastern Time from the coastal town of Macaé prior to the crash. And finally, one day after Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice claimed that the Bush administration made thousands of tactical mistakes, she's backtracking. Now, Rice says that her statement of thousands of mistakes was only figurative, not literal. Some 300 protesters and two dozen supporters met Rice outside the town hall in Blackburn, the home of her counterpart, Foreign Secretary Jack Straw. For Head On Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Alright, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox here in Sydney, Australia, Bruce Birch in North Carolina, and we were picking apart the Republicans. Is that new?
Actually, it's not new, but it is fun. welcome back, everybody. And actually, you know, we have that clip. What we decided to do during the break, John and I, you know, we fly this program by the seat of our pants and the skin of our chinny chin chin, right, John? We decided that we're gonna go to the Humphrey McQueen interview, but we wanted to take the time to pick apart Lindsey Graham's arguments because we feel that it's important to try to create another conversation based on what they're trying to assert. You know, they had the bully pulpit yesterday. Well, we have the bully pulpit today here on Fourth Estate Radio. Is that right, John?
Yes, and I think I just caught the last bit of that. Seems like our little telephony system is having its issues today. But I tell you, man, I'm really glad you got this audio because it's really insane what's going on. We finally have, you know, Feingold's come down to hold people accountable, and first of all, no one from our side shows up, and then the Republicans seem to want to rewrite how they stood on Richard Nixon. I mean, seriously, man. You know, like I'm gonna bring my family straight into this. You know, my stepfather will probably go to his grave saying that Nixon was the greatest American patriot ever, and he never did anything wrong. And it was all a political ploy to get him out. But I'm sorry, it's not.
Yeah, it is not. It really isn't. And you know what? Revisionist history, Lindsey Graham and his cohorts are the epitome. And, I mean, these guys, revisionist history, it makes me flabbergasted. I just get speechless, and I can't do that because I do talk radio. But I do think that clip is loaded. Bob, we'll just ask you to run it and then pause it as we're going, and we'll talk about certain sections as we go. So go ahead and let's run that clip.
Authority when it comes time to fighting a war. Now, Mr. Dean, this is a little bit different than Watergate. Did you ever believe there was a legal basis for the President of the United States to break into the Democratic National Headquarters?
No.
You knew you were committing a crime. That wasn't the debate, whether or not it was legal or not. You just chose to break the law.
I couldn't read the Commander-in-Chief clause the way it's being read today.
That's different. That's different. You read it differently, but nobody read the Constitution to say that Richard Nixon and you could break into somebody's private office and
steal. I don't think when we talk about
Watergate. Isn't that different? Isn't there a big difference between knowingly breaking the law, burglarizing somebody's office, and having a real debate about where authority begins and ends?
Nixon didn't authorize the break-in.
Oh, he didn't. Okay. So did you authorize it?
No, I
did
not.
Did you know about it?
No, I did not.
Let's
did
pause
he ever
it.
Know about it?
Thank you, Bob. It truly amazes me the depths that they will go to try to reframe the argument. The argument isn't about freaking Nixon. The argument is about whether or not this president broke the law in an illegal wiretap that he purposefully avoided, holding himself accountable by going to a FISA court. Right, John?
Well, exactly. And weren't there stories from our last election that the Republicans were probably bugging Kerry, and on top of that you had Rove plant a bug in his own offices?
Yeah, Rove did that in Texas many, many moons ago, and it was found out, and he was fired from a campaign as a result. He was working for Herbert.
And supposedly the bug was running on a battery that could not have possibly... All right, CB, here's my question for you.
Okay.
Now, you know, we have... I know you got to be as frustrated as most of the rest of us, where we have someone like Feingold step up to the plate and ready to have everybody fire right at him.
Yeah.
Why do you think all the rest of the Democrats failed to show up?
I think they didn't show up because of the polls on this particular question. And they're all subscribing to the, if we just keep quiet, that's our best strategy for winning in November.
Okay,
as that sounds, they're taking into account, you know, all of us are pay attention to every gnat's eyelash, but most of the country is too busy having a life. They catch little sound bites. You know, they watch the network news maybe if they feel like they're really concerned citizens. They don't understand what the big flap is about. And that's what the politicians are banking on.
When it comes to those polls, do you think that they're still going on those polls that are asking the wrong question, asking whether the president should be able to spy on Al-Qaeda? Or have we actually started asking the right question in polling on whether or not the president should be allowed to spy on Americans without going through the FISA courts?
I don't know. All I remember is being shocked when I read that, something like, it was like, I'm not exactly sure, but it was like 52-48% in favor of the president spying on Al-Qaeda. And since Gonzalez, since none of them will give any information as to what they're actually doing, we all know they're spying on us all, but they won't give us that meaty little proof in our hands. So most of the public thinks, well, if they're just wiretapping Al-Qaeda people, great. And if they have to listen in to my phone call for a minute to see if I'm, doing something wrong, so what?
But CB, I just want to take issue with one thing.
Okay.
There has been proof released that they have been, the FBI has been surveilling the American Friends Service Committee. They have been surveilling some of the vegan groups. They have been surveilling, for instance, places like the Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh.
That's true.
And if they're surveilling those groups, overtly surveilling them by, gathering and documenting their activities, for sure they're wiretapping them. I mean, there's just no question.
Right.
I mean, they haven't come out and said they're wiretapping them, but they're doing everything else. It would be a foregone conclusion to me to say, as a friend the other day, I was listening to them, they said, I would assume them to do that. Now, I wouldn't necessarily assume... Ann Coulter, perhaps, to all of a sudden decide to write a liberal column.
Okay, that's kind of out of the norm. We would go, okay, that's an April Fool's joke.
Really?
But we wouldn't. But it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to say that these groups would be that these domestic groups would perhaps be wiretapped because they're already surveilling them in other ways. And I think that, you know, where there's, I come from the old adage of where there's smoke, there's fire. You know what I'm saying? That's
well,
my old Southern
yeah,
thing there.
But this is, it's all a problem of not enough of this stuff coming out in the media, and what the consultants are telling them is public perception. And I'm really pretty sure that that's the reason they're being this weak on it, is because they, and plus, a lesson they think they may have learned from the Clinton impeachment. You know, the country was on Clinton's side. And they're thinking that, you know, that we were on Clinton's side because he was the underdog, and they don't want to make W the underdog and make him more popular again, which is goofy. But I really think that that kind of stuff is what is entering into their addled brain, which is why I keep telling everybody, we got to get out in the streets and set them straight on this.
Well, and that's what we're doing tonight.
Yeah, good. Well,
and so I think goofy is the right word to use when it comes to what these people are up to, because it's thoroughly insane. And how can you expect the president to get any other advice than you're doing fine, we'll keep it all away from your back, when your personal attorney is the Attorney General of the United States? And they've set up so much plausible deniability, and the fact that they just seem to be able to evade questions, hearings, actual check and balance, you know.
Yeah.
They're just going to continue to move on the same path. And this is where, you know, CB, you and I have talked about this a couple of times in, you know, here and there, and you talked on Bob. You know, why is it that we continue to allow these people to run ramshot over us, especially those that we even voted for? This is where I'm really having a problem with the Democrats, but with our system, I can't go anywhere else but the Democrats, because I'm only going to end up hurting my point of view.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about how we can perhaps build a different point of view. Later on, I think, John, for sure. I wanted to correct myself. Benedict at Large in the chat room did correct me. He said it was not the FBI that was doing the surveillance of those domestic groups. It was actually the Department of Defense, which is supposed to be against posse comitatus, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, boy.
So
we don't have any recourse if we're going to stick strictly to the rule of law thing. There is no mechanism once they've taken over all the branches. If there's no checks and balances left, we can't stop them. You know, the people in the 9/11 truth movement now are saying, you know, it could well be that they like us knowing so much about it, because it'll just scare us the more, and we can't do anything about it. And that's why I keep saying we got to get out in the streets, because, you know, without creating a huge voice of the people that is tangible like that, we can't get what little representation we have left to actually function for us. It's going to come down to, I mentioned that silly dream on Bob's show. It's going to come down to, we need the guys who are in power, the ones with the arms, to turn on the government.
Well, and who knows, CB, what the future holds, okay? I will say this. I was at a county Democratic convention today. It was their annual convention.
Yeah.
And these folks in this convention, when I mentioned I was talking about this radio network, and I said we're starting up we have started and are borning another liberal radio network, and they said liberal and looked at me kind of funny, and I said, yeah, it's liberal. I thought, hey, I'm in a Democratic meeting, I can say the word liberal, right?
Yeah.
And they said liberal like John Kerry.
Oh.
And I And I said, no. I said, liberal like John Conyers. And they went, oh, great, progressive. But this was across the board. Now, this is, and I can assume that Guilford County, North Carolina, where I live, is probably, I would say, an average would be representative of most average Democratic Party meetings nationwide. But the mood, when I was talking about, when I had conversations with people about the censure, everyone that I talked to was outraged that Russell Feingold that nobody had his back. Everyone is outraged about this president. What I don't understand, and maybe, you know, we can get a legislator online at some point to explain it to us, why it is that the folks who are in Congress aren't listening to what the people are saying when we are saying, hold the guy accountable.
Well, there's the other theory that they have pretty much have a gun over their heads, you know, that they think that, you know, because I've been hearing this an awful lot all over the place, is that he's going to have to blow up another city. You know, he's going to have to attack another city here pretty soon. And, you know, there's a bunch of people out there expecting it. And what happens if our representatives are all having to stay in line because if they don't, he'll pick their city? I mean, that sounds totally way out, but I've been hearing people voicing that concern.
Yeah.
I mean, because it really is just crazy that these guys can't hear us. We've been screaming at the top of our lungs. And everywhere you go on the 9/11 truth lectures and stuff, the houses are packed. The radio shows that are talking about it have got callers by the hundreds, you know, and it's just everybody out there is really upset and wants a big change, and it's not getting out. And surely our representatives are aware of this. And surely a few of them have ideas about the laws of physics, only it just doesn't get talked about.
Well, I think corporate money is a lot of the thing that is keeping these, what I call faux Democrats, from actually backing up real party people.
Well,
I seriously, you know, Bruce and I were talking about this before we went on, and I just really think it's the law, you know, voting machines, yes. We understand that that is the major issue. But we have a system now that has been so hijacked by mad money that even the people that are supposed to be backing up the people's side, which should be the progressives and the Democrats, are addicted to this, sorry, the corporate money tit, and they will not get off it. And until we make publicly funded elections, we're going to be in this same problem. And we're going to have people representing corporate interests instead of the people's interests. And the Republicans have done a really good job in convincing a whole lot of the population that corporate interests are the people's interests. And that's opposite world.
Absolutely.
Very, very well put.
There is another theory coming out that the banks are starting to get a little miffed because they're getting bankrupted. You know, the economy is going so badly that, you know, if the bankers start getting mad enough about this, W might lose a lot of the ground underneath his feet all of a sudden.
Yeah. Well, CB, we are coming up on a break.
Okay,
I want to thank you so much for your call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye. Please do call again.
I will.
All right. This is Fourth Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch. That's John Fox. We'll be right back.
You were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division.
Dad? Let's sing that bedtime song. Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected, would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow. Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Here, and we're not going to go to the interview quite yet. We're going to hold on to Mr. McQueen until the top of our next hour, Bruce, because this subject is just really, really rocking along, and I think we need to stick with it. And I actually think the Democrats need to hear that song we just played coming back in.
Yes, we are all in this together. That, by the way, I just had a request from the chat room. If you are interested in chatting, you can go to our radio network homepage at headonradionetwork.com, click on the chat button there in the upper part of the page, and it'll take you right into our chat room. You can do a really quick little register for your username and password, and it'll shoot you right in there. But we had a request out of the chat room about who was that music, and so I let her know it was Ben Lee. And Ben is really an amazing musician, wonderful lyricist.
And he's got a really good feel about the world. You know, I talked about it when I did that little bit of touring with him down here, and just found him a remarkable young man, and a guy that has a real great connection for what I consider the great cosmic spirit, which is all of us put together.
Absolutely.
And that's part of what the song's talking, you know, that song talks about, you know, and yeah, Ben, you know, if you're feeling down and you just, all this is getting to be too much, Awake is the New Sleep is the name of the album. Go and get it. It will make you feel better.
Yes, it will. Okay, I did want to also, we haven't given out the number. We've already had a couple of phone calls. You can get in on this program. You can be a part of the conversation here with real people by calling 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. But John, I know we wanted to sort of get back to that Graham clip, and pick that guy apart some more. He's so much fun.
I want to crush him like a graham cracker.
This is like a pig picking. A Republican picking. Republican picking. How about that, Mr. Kincaid? All right. Okay, Bob, if you want to go ahead and cue that up, let's listen to some more of the right wing crime
that he knew to be a crime, right?
Senator, it might be important for you to know that
he covered up a crime that he knew to be a crime.
He covered it up for national security reasons.
Give me a break.
He covered it up
to save his hide.
No, sir. You're showing you don't know that subject very well.
What's the national security reason to allow a president to break into the other side's political opponent's office?
The cover-up didn't really concern itself with
it. What enemy are we fighting when you break into the other side's
office?
Senator,
if you let me answer, I'll give you some information you might be able to use.
Please.
He covered it up not because of what had happened at the Watergate, where I think he would have cut the re-election committee loose. He kept them covered up because of what had happened while they were at the White House, which was the break-in into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office. And that, he believed, was a national security activity.
So he had the view that you could plot a crime in the White House and that made it national security. That's absurd. That's why he got
impeached. That isn't what I said.
That's why you went to jail. So let's get to the reality.
Well.
Mr. Chairman, could please, you know,
Bob, if you could pause. Thank you. First of all, Dean didn't go to jail.
Yeah, I was about to ask that. I don't remember that happening.
But you know what? Wait a minute. I'm not going to debate what happened with Richard Nixon. That's past history. Okay?
I know.
And what's happening here
is the fact...
Go ahead, John.
No. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have jumped in on you. You're on a train of thought. I'm just spewing as I do. So I'm going to step away from the mic and let you finish your points.
But what Graham is doing here is exactly what we were talking about on the phone with CB in the last half hour, and that is, you know, Dean is getting away from him, and Dean is going to present some truth. But we can't have that. We've got to sling some more potatoes up on the wall. We've got to throw out some more propaganda and see if any of it sticks. Now, you'll hear toward the end of this clip that Dean has the opportunity to finally make a statement. But Graham is really beginning to look like a schoolyard bully here with what he's trying to do to John Dean. Now, you know, and John Dean was, he was also in the wrong back then. But, you know, that's not the point. This whole hearing. Now, and I got to also say, John, that Feingold's choice of witnesses here may not have been the best choice based on this whole line of discussion with them dredging up Nixon. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm thinking that it may have been a good idea that the Republicans with how cluey they can be when it comes to manipulating things may have ended up turning against him, because I could see Feingold saying, okay, we need some presidential historical perspective here. So what are they going to do? They're going to bring someone in that actually worked for the other side and who was involved in a similar situation. This is what kills me. They're trying to distance themselves from Nixon while applying certain parts of what happened to Nixon to defend Bush. And again, I really wonder, has Fox News and the like just, you know, destroyed the average American's ability to analyze and listen and I don't know, be discerning? Has it been just completely shot to hell? And another question that I have, I don't know if you know this, but in the UK, it's been shown that there is traceable amounts of Prozac in the public water system. Now, that's happening in the United States as well. So basically, most Americans have some Prozac and other antidepressants in their bodies.
Wow.
Could we be drugging the whole population into inaction?
I don't know. I'd like to see that. John, you're going to have to send me that link. I've never – that's one I hadn't heard yet. That's a new one.
No. I'll find the English story, and I do believe that there was a leak of similar things in America, but again, the Bush administration jumped in and said, no, we can't be releasing that information to the public. So I'll do some searching. I believe it was from the BBC, a few months ago. But I just sit here flabbergasted, man. You know, it never ceases to amaze me how someone, you know, these Republicans can just go with blinders on. You know, I feel like, you know, three Republicans are the, you know, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil monkeys, you know, and as long as each one of them isn't listening or watching or paying attention, you know, the party can do whatever it pleases. But, you know, we have some fundamental problems here.
Yes,
when you have the public, you know, the public is it's obvious what's going on, and the public wants some answers.
I'm thinking the public is wanting some answers. I'm thinking let's go ahead and run out the rest of this clip and make some more fun of this guy. I mean,
wait, just a minute, Senator.
This is my 5 minutes. I'd like to use it like
so
I
far,
see fit.
I asked Senator Graham to desist once, and after that, I think Mr. Dean's been defending himself pretty well.
Great. And my point is that this
is with respect to answering the question.
Thanks, sir.
Pause.
The substance.
Thank
go ahead, Mr. Graham.
My point is...
Pause, John. Bob. If you notice that Specter, right there, he said, Mr. Dean has been defending himself quite well with regard to the questioning, not necessarily the substance. Did you hear that?
I'm still trying to actually decipher that statement exactly. You know what I mean?
It was directed square at Dean for being on the other side of the witness table, I believe. Hey, you're supposed to be one of us. What are you doing over there?
Yeah, hey, lockstep, buddy, lockstep.
That's right. Let's go. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You want to continue on with the clip?
Yeah, let's go ahead and roll the clip there.
Apples and oranges. That anybody who believes that Richard Nixon was relying on some inherent authority argument to allow himself to break into a political opponent is recreating history. This debate is about when does the power of the president begin and end in a time of war. This is a honest, sincere debate. We've got a Supreme Court case that says the force resolution, the Hamdi case, allows the president to put someone in jail as an enemy combatant in spite of the fact that Section 1401 of the U.S. Code, 18 U.S.C. 4001, says no citizen shall be imprisoned or otherwise detained by the United States except pursuant to an act of Congress. And Justice O'Connor said the force resolution authorizing force.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. John, you want to comment on that?
Well, first of all, does this guy just sound like he was a spoiled brat when he was a kid? Or is it me? You know,
no,
hey, and you know what? Well, a couple weeks ago, Gail actually found a thing showing that your average neocon was an only child, which meant that they never had to discuss anything with anybody, and they were always number one.
Wow. That's an interesting idea.
Okay. Yeah, and it was a predominant number when they did this polling data, which is another, you know. But I'm listening to this guy who would probably, before these hearings, would have backed up Richard Nixon to the hilt, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely would have backed him up and saying that, you know, and saying that, trying to say that Richard Nixon was using a different argument is bogus. Because there's that clip that Crooks and Liars came up with a couple of months ago where it shows Nixon on that interview saying, and when the president does it, that means it is not illegal. And they were trying to use the same powers. It really, really blows my mind how they can flat out lie and distort and still somehow think that they effectively do push their bogus point forward.
And I think what you'll find also, I mean, this last little bit, Mr. Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, there, which is directly under my state, North Carolina, he says that you know, he starts trying to pull out the imprisoning people. I mean, this is a whole thing. It didn't really seem relevant when I heard it the first time. But then when I heard it the second time, what he was trying to prove was that the U.S. Supreme Court had upheld upheld a decision that essentially, in some strange way, created more justification for this philosophy of the unitary executive. Okay, but what he didn't mention is that the unitary executive is not following the Geneva Conventions. Again, here I'm going back to the rule of law. Why do I keep doing that?
Well, and where have you seen anywhere where it's written about unitary executive powers ever anywhere?
Oh. No, no.
I mean, like an law. I mean,
no, there is no law. It's just it's all theory.
Yeah, it's all pulled out of. It's all made out of whole cloth. It's completely bogus. And I do believe in Feingold's opening statement, which Bob played yesterday. He said, in this situation where the president seems to go around every check and balance that we have, you know, sorry, I have so many thoughts going on at once. I kind of get tied up, but I just, how do these people sleep at night? Is money that comforting?
Do you need a minute, John?
I don't know. Please take it for a second, because I just got so angry there for a second. I lost my complete train of thought while almost sucking my cigarette down to a filter.
Well,
sorry,
we
Bob.
Don't want that to happen. We don't want that to happen. Bob, go ahead and run the rest of that clip, if you would.
And Afghanistan met that requirement. And she also said, inherent to fighting a war is putting people in prison who are part of the enemy. The problem here is that we got a pre-existing statute. Mr. Fine, and you're right. If you take this argument too far, what the president is saying, Mr. Addington is saying, makes me wonder if you can have the UCMJ. Could the Congress ever do anything in a time of war to regulate the land and naval forces? The answer to me is yes, the Congress can. Yes, the president can go after the enemy. The middle ground, to me, is the Congress and the president working together. And they did act in good faith. I just disagree with them.
Pause there.
Senator Graham, Senator Leahy.
Can you respond to that?
Bob. Do you care?
Thank you.
Who is good faith, Bruce? Who is acting in good faith? And who...
Again, there's more propaganda. That they're throwing more potatoes up on the wall there, John.
I reckon it's not potatoes, but I can't say what it is on air.
Well, and that's why I'm using potatoes, because it seems to be the closest... boiled mashed potatoes seems to be the closest thing in substance to what we are referring to. But the thing that really got me with that little point again is, you know, this whole thing about the Congress and the president working together. Well, you know, that's not the way the founders intended it. The founders intended for Congress and the president, yes, to work together to a degree, but to also hold each other accountable for their actions. That was the check and balance.
Oh,
we
absolutely.
Don't have that.
And absolutely. I just, when he makes this, you know, working in good faith thing, this little statement, yeah, the Congress dealt in good faith as they went around the back door, and it was the administration that didn't act in good faith and went and did what they weren't supposed to do. You
Which
know,
really
I just
amazes me that the Senate would sit there after creating laws and being the legislative branch of government, that they would sit there and really and just, you know, allow him to usurp all their power. And I don't want to get off into another whole point, but there is another whole point about this and you know, the whole signing statements thing. But let's go ahead and listen to there's only about 30 seconds left in the clip. Let's let her run on out. What do you think, John?
Only respond that the very opening premise of the senator's assumption that Nixon had somehow ordered a break-in based on anything in the historical record, based on anything in my knowledge, it's just dead wrong.
He condoned it.
He did not know about it, Senator. It's hard to condone something you don't know about.
Once you know about it, he condoned
Then, as I told you, he had a totally different agenda for covering it up.
Incredible.
Absolutely incredible. What's neat about that back part of that clip is that Dean lets him have it, tells him the truth.
good. Good on him. Good on him, because, you know, Dean's shown himself to be someone that stood up for what's right and not necessarily his party, which is a very, very difficult thing to do. And where I have a problem with Graham's statement before was talking about a time of war and who has what powers. And I still go back to the fact that Congress never declared war on Iraq or Afghanistan. So they never actually gave the president the power in which to mobilize the forces. If you actually go into the way it's written, the way the United States is supposed to declare war, none of it was ever done. Same thing in 1990.
All they did was authorize him to go after the people who committed the attacks on September 11th, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
But we are coming up into a break, and my name's Bruce Burns. That's John Fox. This is Fourth Estate Radio. We're rocking on with Real People Radio. Please do join us right after this break.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Welcome back, folks, to Fourth Estate Radio. And yes, Scotty McClellan is a schmuck. I think we can all agree on that. And
quack, quack.
I do believe it is time for us to
move
on to our occupation watch. Quack, quack, quack,
quack,
quack. Bruce, please.
That was my Scotty McClellan.
Oh, yeah, man. Don't even make me go there. Don't even make me go there. But please, we hear enough from Quack Boy. Why don't you give us a little bit on the occupation in Iraq?
Yeah, let's do that.
Maybe some of the stuff that old Quack Boy is not telling us.
Well, you know, this government hates giving real facts to the media, and you know, so it's hard to get out of them what's going on over there, but. Just, you know, we try to every show bring you the human cost of occupation with Iraq, in Iraq. And the human cost of occupation this week, since the war began on March the 19th, 2003, 327 soldiers have died, U.S. soldiers have died in Iraq. Since the mission accomplished, major combat operations are over, 2,190 have died in Iraq, which is well over 90-something 5%. And of course, the Iraqis themselves have lost anywhere from 130,000 to 140,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. And you know, the estimates there are really hard to discern because of the fact that, you know, we're not counting those people, which is a sad thing. But I did want to bring this story up, and this is about the drumbeat of war that is beating louder and louder and louder in the Middle East. And this is out of the Telegraph of London today. Actually, will be in tomorrow's newspaper in London. And that is that the government is to hold secret talks with defense chiefs tomorrow to discuss possible military strikes against Iran. A high-level meeting will take place in the Ministry of Defense at which senior defense chiefs and government officials will consider the consequences of an attack on Iran. It is believed that an American-led attack designed to destroy Iran's ability to develop a nuclear bomb is inevitable if Tehran's leaders fail to comply with United Nations demands to freeze their uranium enrichment program. Tomorrow's meeting, it talks about who's going to attend the meeting, which really, you know, has no bearing as much on us. But the International Atomic Energy Authority, the nuclear watchdog, believes that much of Iran's program is now devoted to uranium enrichment and plutonium separation, technologies that could provide material for nuclear bombs to be developed in the next 3 years. I don't know how true that is, John, but I want to say this. We said on this radio program, gosh, probably 3 months ago, that this was where this was heading. And
here's a story about a lovely lady. Yeah, remember the rerun comment that we had?
The reruns, exactly. And,
yep.
And you know, what really bugs me the most about this is that, you know, they're managing this kind of stuff in this country now. You know, this story comes out in the Telegraph of London. This is a national newspaper, right? In the UK.
Yeah.
You're not going to see this in USA Today here. You're not going to see this in the New York Times. What you're going to see in the New York Times is how, you know, how evil the Iranians are. The other thing that I wanted to bring up also about what's going on in Iran is that they have this week embarked on a national their national navy is training 40,000 sailors in the Gulf right now to train them in repelling a force. It's really heating up, and it's getting kind of scary, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, and as we reported previously, the Iranians came to the American government wanting to talk about all these issues, and the administration shot them down because this is something that they wanted. And it's, again, playing this denial game, writing the script and denying any fact to the contrary. And, you know, we said it before. You know, I believe still, Iran is only moving forward on this because they're being threatened.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have discussed this, and we'll discuss this, you know, the more it heats up, the more it'll be on the front burner rather than the back burner. But, you know, it has been there's you know, the whole thing with the euro, the fact that the president went down there to that part of the world and talked to India, Pakistan. I mean, we basically have allies completely surrounding Iran right now, and you know, a fool could see what's going on. You know, I dare say that they are going to be the PNAC folks are bound and determined to create a new reality in the Middle East, and I hate to see what it's going to hold in store for us 20 years down the road.
5 years down the road. I mean, look at where
exactly.
We are now. I'm really, really amazed. And with that music, we're about to go out on the end of this hour. We got Bob's News coming up. And when we come back, we're going to finally get to that interview that I did with Humphrey McQueen, Australian historian, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So Bruce and I will be back right after the news.
How can we help prepare our kids for the future? Hi, this is Roger McGuinn. These days, our children face challenges unimaginable to us only a generation ago. We adults need to help our kids find something in school that really sparks their interest and keeps them involved. If that something happens to be music, the child will benefit in so many ways. Playing music in school is a great way to make friends. Studies are showing that kids involved in music are less likely to get into trouble. And kids who study music find science and math easier to grasp. They tend to score higher on SATs. It has something to do with something called spatial IQ. So get your kids involved with school music. It's a great way to help prepare them for life.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Hello.
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this,
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And on Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid. A nation of immigrants flexed its muscle again on Saturday, this time in New York City. Thousands and thousands of people opposed to Republican plans to make criminals of Hispanic workers formed a line more than a mile long crossing the Brooklyn Bridge. The marchers crossed the Brooklyn Bridge carrying signs and banners, including one sign that read, "I cleaned up Ground Zero." On the other side of the debate, the so-called Minuteman
Lots
Project.
Of talk about the way. Lots of experts. Lots of.
On the other side of the debate, the so-called Minuteman Project returned to the U.S.-Mexican border on Saturday. The Minutemen are an anti-Latino group who think Hispanic workers are more dangerous than even Osama bin Laden. With the immigration debate taking center stage, you might have expected George Bush to address it in his radio speech on Saturday, but no, Bush used his weekly radio address to press for more tax cuts.
Since 2001, the tax relief we delivered has left $880 billion in the hands of American workers and small businesses and families like yours. And you've used that money to help produce more than 4 years of uninterrupted economic growth.
Unstated in Bush's address was the fact that U.S. auto parts manufacturer Delphi announced plans on Friday to eliminate 28,500 workers' jobs, as well as asking a bankruptcy judge to void their labor contracts as well as their contracts with General Motors. Jill Carroll is free, and she said Saturday that she was forced to participate in a propaganda video as a condition of being released by her kidnappers in Iraq. The Christian Science Monitor journalist said, quote, "During my last night in captivity, my captors forced me to participate in a propaganda video. I wanted to go home alive. I agreed. Things that I was forced to say while captive are now being taken by some as an accurate reflection of my personal views. They are not." Families in America are waiting and wondering about the fate of an American helicopter in Iraq. A U.S. helicopter crashed on Saturday southwest of Baghdad, according to military public affairs spokesman. Quote, "The aircraft was conducting a combat air patrol. The status of the crew is unknown. It is also unknown whether the helicopter crashed as a result of hostile fire." Also, a U.S. Marine died Saturday from wounds he suffered in an attack on Friday. The Marine, assigned to the 228 Brigade Combat Team, was killed in Al Anbar province. This is News on the Horn. the Head-On Radio Network.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
On Friday, she said they had made thousands of mistakes in Iraq in the Bush administration. Now, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is trying to take it all back. In statements made on Saturday, Condoleezza Rice said that she was speaking, quote, figuratively, not literally. Quote, first of all, I meant it figuratively, not literally. Let me be very clear about that. I wasn't sitting around counting, unquote. The point I was making to the questioner, she said, is that, of course, if you've ever made decisions, you've undoubtedly made mistakes. The remarks came in Blackburn, England, as she visited the home area of Foreign Secretary Jack Straw. About 300 protesters against the Iraq war showed up to greet her. Condoleezza Rice was earlier asked not to visit a mosque in the area. At least 10 gunmen in 3 cars shot dead a Shiite tribal chief in Iraq, as well as 4 male relatives near Balad Ruz, as the men made their way home from a funeral procession on Saturday. One of the family members was a policeman with the Bakuba Intelligence Service. None of the gunmen was hurt. There was no information on a motive on the attack, apart from the fact that civil war may be raging in Iraq. Armed men stormed the Palestinian Interior Ministry building Saturday in the West Bank. Several violent demonstrations took place Saturday as militant leaders ignored calls for calm and peace from the newly installed Hamas-led government. Some 15 members of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, a militant group affiliated with the Fatah Party, entered the offices of the building in Nablus. They climbed onto the roof. They shot their rifles in the air. There were no reported casualties. This is News on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
We're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch. Over there is my pal, my buddy, my compadre, John Fox. John, you still with us?
Ah, yeah, man. This has been quite a show so far. We've had great calls, and I'm really enjoying picking apart the Republicans in a little bit more detail than usual. I think we're going to have to make this a stock standard for the show.
Yeah.
But for a little bit, we're going to hold on phone calls and discussing the problems within our government at the moment. And I did get an interview with this gentleman by the name of Humphrey McQueen, and he's a longtime Australian historian. He's a very much of a left instigator in all the best ways. And he gave this month's lecture on, if it's not fascism, what is it? So afterwards, I had a sit down with him, and our mate Rodrigo, who was on a couple of weeks ago, was actually there for this. And aside from me being a little bit chatty, because I think I was fired up, we got some really great stuff. In the first section of this, he'll go through quite a few different things and set up to talk about Coca-Cola, which we'll get into the second part of it. So, Bob, if you'd like to run this, this is Mr. Humphrey McQueen.
John Fox here with Humphrey McQueen. Sir, thank you so much. Your lecture, our listeners will be listening to this after this interview. So, the title of this talk that you gave was, if it's not fascism, what is it? My question is, I reckon you're familiar with Umberto Eco's 14 points of fascism, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as far as I look at coming from the U.S. and living here, virtually everything that's happening today lines straight up with all those points, right? Mm. The combining of the corporates and the government in which to gain control over the marketplace, everything. Mm. It seems as though you're looking for another word than fascism for what's happening today. What makes you think that it's different than fascism?
Because those 14 points, if you like, in those sense, are happening in different ways and different relationships to each other and in a different structured world. Certainly, we still live, first of all, within a capitalist world. Mm-hmm. So that hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And we still live within a monopoly capitalist world, which and that was the first time when fascism first appeared.
Have we ever actually lived in a non-monopolistic capitalist world?
Yeah, we did. There was a period in the mid of the 19th century where you had price competition, where you had small to medium businesses doing most of the running.
Mm-hmm.
You had government corporations. In that period, certainly. I mean, a corporation.
That's a completely different animal, too.
Yeah,
a government
very
corporation, because as far as I understand, it was similar in Australia as it was in the United States. Before corporatism came up with the concept of corporate personhood and pushed that through the courts, corporations were things that were for fixed purposes for a fixed period of time, and they needed to disband for the simple purpose that they couldn't overrun.
Like a bridge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
As opposed to a private road.
Yeah, or like, you know, where they hold it forever and keep on taxing you forever and a day. Yeah. Now, it's because those combinations and the dynamics within them have been transformed. I mean, we're now in a different era of monopoly capitalism. It's still monopoly capitalism, but the ways in which it now works, partly because it's what it's been through. You know, history doesn't repeat itself because we've already done it. No, no.
Right.
I mean, history is a one-off. Every historical event.
To me, it feels like we're coming full circle right up to the lead up to the Great Depression of the 30s, and we're about to get hit with something much, much worse than we ever imagined.
Well, that could be, but if it does, it'll be a different depression to the one in the 1930s.
Oh, and I reckon it's going to be much more severe this time around.
But the dynamics, where it starts, where it operates from, I mean, see, one of the things we've got now in the world system, and, you know, I mean, I've been sort of watching out for the world depression since I came back from Japan in 1990 when I thought it was going to begin then. And
you
so I've kind of given up, sort of, you know, waiting for it to appear over the sunrise at me. But one of the things that now happens, which is, I think, one of the reasons why it hasn't already struck, is that in the 20s, you had 1.5 growth centers for the expansion of capital. The U.S. was clearly the one.
Right.
And bits of, you know, you piece a half together out of the rest of Europe, you know, and that was about it. Now, you've got at least 3 or 4 of those possible growth centers. And whether the system can collapse, and the system's so much bigger. Yeah, I mean, the whole size. So that what you now have to think about, what I try and think about in this regard, is this momentum of something so huge, meaning that it does just of its own size now move forward in a way it couldn't when it ran into that obstacle in the late 1920s. And because there are these different spots, different epicenters within it, that it can fall down in one as it did in Japan for 10 or 12 years. I mean, they went into they went into 30s. They went into a deflationary cycle.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're talking about, what was it, the late 80s when the yen completely tanked?
Well, it starts to tank in well, I come back at the end of March 1990.
Okay,
and
so it's
the
90s
just
actually
beginning
right,
to
right,
come
right.
down,
okay.
And then it went down, and you know, but it's, you know, but they've come through it.
They have,
you know, and perhaps they've come through it because they have a non-market system that the termites held hands and let the system down easily. If you'd applied the American way of doing things, which they did to the Soviet Union at the same time, virtually, I think the whole world would have gone. And if they'd forced the Japanese to clear all the debt out in one go, I think it would have taken the whole world down with it.
Well, it's interesting, and I'm going to come back to the Japan thing in a minute, because you struck me there in the discussion today, but I don't know if you're aware of what's been happening in the United States since Friday with the Latin Americans taking to the streets. Do you know about this?
Little. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it continued today.
Yeah.
By the thousands.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
What I find interesting here is you have the most abused of the worker class within the largest economy of the planet at the moment, whether it's inflated or, you know, however you look at it. What I look at, being someone that grew up there and knowing these people, this is the hardest working class of the entire economy, flat out. They put out more than what is spent on them, flat out. But we're seeing them taking to the streets faster than any American does.
Yeah.
Can you see why that? Do you see why that might be the case?
Well,
and why maybe possibly the Americans aren't taking to the streets when some of us think that they should be.
Yeah, but I mean, they have at this moment a particular issue that affects them and their close people.
Well, this is red herring
directly.
Stuff, which is total right-wing stuff, because we believe we've been looking at this. It's this little bill that has caused all this turmoil in the United States. Has passed the House, but we don't think it'll ever pass the Senate, right? It's all about elections.
Yeah, but there is something that has acted as the catalyst that's precipitated, you know, all of the resentments. It gives it a focus on both sides, the right doing for legal reasons, so it comes out of that. So the history is always about specifics and times and places. You know,
everything it takes context.
Yeah, so that's one aspect of it. The other thing about that society, still, as I understand a little bit of it totally from the outside, is that it still holds together with much larger family linkages, you know, in a much more extended family sense. Mm-hmm. And also, a lot of that plays into one or other of the church communities, so that people are held together in a way in which what we were talking about what has happened to individualism, in modern Australian capitalism or American capitalism, that kind of triumph of this hollowest of forms of individualism hasn't yet triumphed over that in the same way. So even though you don't have trade unions, even though you may not have organized labor forces amongst these groups, there are other social formations that mean to say that they can link with each other, they can build.
Well, this has been the amazing thing. On our show just this last week, we had an interview with a Latin American activist in the States, and what seemed to be without any organized plan or anything, they went straight back to what happened in 1968 before the big march for Martin Luther King, where the teachers got involved, but they knew that it was the students. And like I told Rodrigo just last week, again today, we had teachers at a certain defined time turn and face the blackboard and let the students walk out, and they played plausible deniability by staring at the blackboard until the end of class.
Yeah.
And I think that this shows, and I don't know what it is, what defines one, I shouldn't say social class, but one group of people from another that they can connect so well that when all the mess that's been being made in the last 5 years, however you want to make it, I mean, there's been a definite shift in what's happened globally over the last 5 years. What is it that makes suddenly a second-class citizen part of your population actually stand up and take the streets?
Well, I know...
Over the indigenous supposedly indigenous population.
Yeah, but, you know, the ways in which those structures... I mean, I've just been reading something again about the American construction industry, because it's something I'm interested in working on here. So I've been looking at that, and I mean, just to get a broad outside view, no expertise really. Mm. I'm not saying that. But when you look at the ways in which that class had been broken up, and some of the ways in which it had been broken up were the ways in which 100 years ago it held itself together. So that, you know, these small locals, you know, building communities in particular places, which gave them their base.
Mm-hmm.
100 years later, these are the things that prevent them having any, well, they don't prevent them entirely, but they impede the growth of wider organisational connections, mm-hmm. not just across ethnic barriers, although they're very important. They're also from one geographic group, I mean, one town to the next town. About tradesmen moving from one place to another. So that, in a way, what some of the Latin American people have as an advantage is that they haven't been there long enough to have set structures in place that were originally invented to protect and to defend and to advance, which then, in a changed circumstance, make it harder for you to be able to do this. Now, I think that's one of the things that is happening in the United States. But more generally, everywhere, it's true here, it's true everywhere, that when people talk a lot about, you know, reformist politics, you know, that, you know, the working class is, you know, reformist, or the Labour Party is reformist or something, I used to go along with that, you know, and then someone pointed out to me today, another of my, you know, manual working friends.
It's good having friends.
Who pointed out that reformism is not primarily an ideology. Reformism is what we all have to do in order to put food on the table. It's what we do in order to get something to eat and to feed our kids and to pay the rent. The ideology grows out of that. You know, the fact that we have to sell our labour power to the capitalist, that's the basis of reformism in social practice. It's not a bad idea that people have, you know, and if only you could change their idea.
Mm.
So, accepting that, the next extraordinary thing is not that people don't stand up to the system. The extraordinary thing is that we do. Ever. And you think, well, people think, well, I don't have quite enough money to live, but I can get by, and I'll have to cut back on this, and I might be under debt a bit. But they don't do that. Every now and again, you know, in ways that nobody seems to predict, nobody's able to say, you know, the working class has gone quiet, mm-hmm. you know, or this factory or something, nothing's happening there. And then, bingo, you know, something. You know, what it is, you know, well, there are always particular cases you can trace in the back, and people do. But that people will not always put up with that.
Well, there, okay, that ends part one, okay, Bruce? And I was interested... the fact that here I'm complaining that the Americans haven't done anything yet. But his point of view is that he's more amazed when people, you know, actually do get up and make a stand. You know, and it's just amazing.
So he's operating from sort of the opposite paradigm then.
Well, when we get, we're going to go to a break real quick and then come back and get into the second part of this, where he gets into what's happened with Coca-Cola and the assassination squads. And I think this will then explain why he has this point of view. So, you know, as we wait for some music to come in, we're going to go to a break here, and we're going to come back, Bruce, with the second half of this interview with Humphrey McQueen, and we'll be back on For the State Radio.
Delay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grasoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told you that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or selling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grasoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Friends, drugs and alcohol were the only friends I had. Then a real friend got me into a treatment center. It wasn't easy. Drug and alcohol addiction is a horrible disease. But I got better. I got my friends back, and I got my life back. Treatment taught me what a true friend really is.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
This is Bruce Birch back on Fourth State Radio, and I know we have another part two of this fascinating interview, John. Where did you find this guy?
Well, it's just pure luck that he was the next guy on the list to give a lecture for this cricketers lecture series that we've been doing here. And it won't be one next month because it runs right into Australia's Anzac Day, which is our Labor Day. And the one coming in May I'm fascinated about because we're having an international economist come in and maybe talk about the real money situation.
Friends. Oh, that's going to be amazing.
So, yeah, he was actually there the other night for this one, and he wanted to check things out. And Weeze and I had a little bit of a chat to him earlier in the day when we were setting up, and that's going to be awesome. We talked about the Chinese backing us up and all this other stuff. It's really, really, really going to be really, really good. Now, I want to move on to part two of this interview. And for those of you who don't know, Coca-Cola is probably one of the most evil corporations that walks this planet. Okay? Most of you are drinking pesticides and things that are in the Coca-Cola. There has been rat fecal matter found in the Coca-Cola plants down here, and the bottle still made it to the shelf. So if that's how they think about doing their business, listen very closely. Anyone who does not know about this previously, I guarantee you most of our listeners will suddenly write off Coca-Cola and all their products upon hearing this segment. Please roll it, Bob.
And the extreme example, I think, if we step outside of this, is if you take, because I've written this book about Coca-Cola, I know a little bit about it. You take those Coca-Cola plants in Guatemala. Time and time again, someone's tried to organize a little union amongst those drivers
and
workers.
And the death squads come out.
And they come out. They either come out and they shoot them, they abduct their kids, they rape their daughters. There's a whole range of levels on which they do this. Now, you'd think when this had happened the first time, you'd think, well, the bloke didn't know any better.
Yeah.
Therefore, but
then a bit of the doubt first time.
Then 5 years later, someone else does it.
Yeah.
You think, has he forgotten?
And then the next time someone organizes.
Yeah, you know, and then 5 years later, someone else does it again.
Yeah.
And so you have to ask yourself, you know, why is it that people who know these enormous risks that they're taking, I mean, they're almost not risks, they're almost certainties in many cases, that's the kind of thing that's going to happen to them. Why do they do that? That seems to me to be more remarkable than the fact that you're pointing to the fact that most of the American working class at the moment are pretty quiescent.
Fair enough. Fair enough. My last question, I really thank you for the time, because the talk was something else, and it actually went in directions that I wasn't expecting by the title. Seriously.
Yeah, well,
it was good. So my last thing is I want to ask you, we're in a very, very topsy-turvy world at the moment, right? Things are very shaky, and if you're honest about what's going on, you should be scared, as far as I'm concerned, right? In your view, is there... I happen to believe that there's something wrong with the collective consciousness of this planet, that we're all kind of bent to the wrong direction, okay? And not to be very, very hippie and all that about that, but I actually think that over the last few decades, we've skewed in a direction that we've lost kind of our focal point on what it is to actually care about the person who lives next door. What would you think would be a major focus that people could lean on in which to turn this thing around?
Well,
I know it's a hard one, but...
No, I mean, this is partly, of course, you know, I mean, all answers to those questions have to, in part, be cop-outs.
Of course. I'm looking for your emotional, based on all of your knowledge and thought and everything else, what your heart says this world needs to do to change things around.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, and I was saying it about the nature of fascism, is that only new things happen. Everything that happens is going to be new. It's not going to be like something else. I mean, it will be like something else in as much as things are kind of rough comparisons, but it is not going to be... I mean, nothing is ever the cookie-cutter copy of the previous example. So what we do now is something, and this is what I take basically as myself as a historical materialist, we learn by doing.
Absolutely.
And it's only by doing that we learn what the answer to your question is. So the question then comes back to me is, what should we do?
We need to learn.
We learn in those by doing things, and we learn doing collectively. That we learn by doing things with other people. And these may be things like, you know, Rodrigo organizing this, you know, and you organizing to come. This is all part of it. And I'm sure that even in something as small as this, that Rodrigo has learned things about how to do the next one and the one after that that he didn't know when
the learning curve
when he started it.
Yeah.
And it's that sense that I think that we can pay much more attention to within the intellectual domains. What happens in the practical domains? As we're seeing it now, as I think, you know, as I said, you go to Geelong, and it's an old industrial town, but there are older industrial towns in Australia who don't produce the kind of current results that Geelong produces. And it's been because they have managed, through a small group of people initially, to build on the traditions of the place. I mean, the 8-hour-a-day dinner I went to speak at, they've been going on for over 100 years. Now, it's gone through various changes. I mean, it had fallen into the hands of the ALP for a few years, and it's kind of been taken back from them. But that sense that this is something you do, this is something that's part of your local community tradition. And when I was talking earlier about the need to think in terms of, you know, of nationalism and patriotism, you know, patriotism on the left is often seen as marching off to war behind a flag. But, of course, the other side
that's
of patriotism...
Changing. That's changing, though. I'm sorry to jump in, but what I've been watching in America, being my home country, and I pay attention to a lot of the media there, on the left, patriotism is coming up with its new definition, which is, I think, much more true to the real ideal. I think that patriotism... Just like if you actually use, you have the term here, un-Australian, and in America, un-American.
Yeah.
If you said to someone that they were un-English, they'll laugh at you.
Yeah. But the other side that's come into that, I think, and we need to recognise it very much, and people do, is
that environmental protection is very much a part of that patriotic feeling, the sense that one's own environment is part of your sense of self and your family life. But it's also not just the physical one, and it's not just the state and the political system. It is the sense that your own, you know, your family traditions, the people you grew up with, the neighbourhood, the sense that that is what it is that when you feel at home somewhere.
Yes.
I mean, Manning Clark used to say about, you know, he said, how does he know he's, you know, that he's an Australian? And Manning's answer was a bit of a joke, but I think a very real one. He said, because when I'm in Australia, I know what will get me into a fight in a pub. Now, that's something that, you know, that I didn't know in Japan. I had no idea what would get me into a fight in Japan or Germany or the US or somewhere.
I want to come back to that. You actually said during your lecture, and I was curious about this because I never have heard this come out of anyone, when you mentioned about the Aboriginal saying that Australia was a very racist nation.
Yeah.
And you said you lived in Japan.
Mm.
What was so racist about Japan?
I knew.
What?
I knew.
Explain.
They're Aborigines.
Oh, right.
They don't exist.
Oh, really?
They don't exist.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure whether there are no externals, because that's what I've never caught from them. They're fairly kind of...
So that's the real peak of it. The next bit of it is the way they treat Koreans.
Yes.
Of whom there are 500,000.
Right.
You know. But the fundamental, I mean, if you want to compare, I mean, Aborigines, you know, bad and all as it all is here, you know, you wouldn't want to be an Ainu.
Right, okay.
Because you don't exist. There are only Japanese.
It's interesting because when I moved from New York to Texas, I felt like there was only Texas and Texans
yeah, well,
and Mexicans.
Heck yeah,
but,
yeah. But so, yeah, I mean, and I think it's probably also infinitely more sexist than Australia. I mean, I benefited from that.
But I can definitely see that. But yeah. I'd never heard anyone make that statement before.
Well, I got to know a lot of left-wing Japanese who... they were boasting about, we are the most racist country in the world. I mean, it wasn't a new kind of chauvinism. But they certainly had that sense of, you know, about a bit of part of their attitude towards... I mean, and also to their own untouchables, of whom there are 2 million.
Right.
The Boracoin.
Right.
And the reason that the Communist Party, who I got to know some leading members of very well, extraordinary people, what they've lived through, what they've done, people who joined the party during the Second World War, which is not bad going.
Yeah.
But what they said to me about why they want to get rid of the emperor is not to get rid of the emperor. Particular emperor, you know, he's kind of like a suburban, you know, householder. Mm. He's no consequence whatsoever. It's the emperor system. And one of the features of the emperor system is, because it's Shinto, the emperor represents 300% purity.
In
order to have purity, you've got to have filth. So who is filth?
So he's...
The Boracoin.
Right.
So the only way you can liberate the Boracoin is to get rid of the emperor system.
I like it. Humphrey McQueen, thank you very much,
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being on Fourth Estate and MGK New Media.
All right, thank you.
I tell you what, man. It was some interesting perspectives there.
And, most absolutely.
You know, yeah, and for anyone who doesn't know about Coca-Cola and the Colombians and everything else, and do some Google searching, please, because I hope that then you will decide that nothing made by Coca-Cola will ever get a dime of your money.
Well, I was, you know, in the chat room a minute ago, and one of the people in the chat was saying that it was kind of, you know, that we were painting a little bit broadly with blaming the corporate Coca-Cola company when what they do is franchise out the syrup to local bottlers.
Yep, that's exactly what they do.
So okay, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Bruce, sorry.
I was going to say, so would condemning the entire company for the action of John, do you have me back?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right. What I asked was, is it responsible to blame the entire corporation for the actions of a few bottlers in remote locations for the sins of is that a responsible thing to do?
I think absolutely, because they have a history of doing this wherever any nation decides to try and organize. They want I was handed a couple years ago a marketing article from within the industry on Coca-Cola. They want to have a beverage for every moment that you might want something. They want to own every time you want to drink something. That's why they own things like Mount Franklin Water. I'm not sure what it goes by up in the States. They want to make milk-like beverages and sell them to schools. And there have been traces, not just traces, but heavy doses of pesticides found in Australian Coca-Cola. So I do not think that this is about the local bottlers. I think this is about the parent corporation dictating the policy.
Okay. Well, I raised the question because it was raised in the chat room, and I felt like it would be something that seemed to be to warrant a little bit of discussion.
And also remember this. One thing that has not changed about Coca-Cola or the soda industry since the 70s, the product contained in the aluminum can you buy cost less than a half a cent to produce, and the tin can actually cost 10 times more than the product. And how much are you paying for that? As Coca-Cola gets water rights above the public in many countries.
Well, and I was going to say corporations pretty much get more rights anyway. I mean, they just because they have the money and they can control the bureaucrats. But
I really think that people, if it's not too late where they are, should hang on after the show and listen to Humphrey's lecture, because there's a lot about all this in there. And I don't want to take up too much time discussing this now, because I think we can pick this up. It's a lot of food for thought. I want to move on, because I don't want to run out of time, man. We have this Savage clip that you sent me this morning, and I do not want to get away today without playing this piece of garbage.
Well, we listened to one we had one Republican picking earlier. I think it's time to do another. What do you say, John? You want to do another one?
Let's do it, man. Roll that clip, Bob.
And unless we say no to illegal aliens waving the Mexican flag in the street by burning the Mexican flag in the street across America. That's right. Burn the Mexican flag on your street corner. Show what you care about. Show that you won't take it anymore. Show that you're sick of everybody pushing us around like we're a pitiful, helpless giant of a nation that is out of control because we have nothing but corruption and rot at the highest level. Do that. Burn a Mexican flag for America. Burn a Mexican flag for those who died that you should have a nationality and a sovereignty. Go out in the street and show you're a man. Burn 10 Mexican flags if I could recommend it. Put one in the window upside down. And tell them to go back where they came from. And if that's a little too xenophobic for you, ask yourself why the xenophobes from Mexico wave their flag in your country. Ask yourself why the racist xenophobes of La Raza will not speak English in this country. You'll find out what xenophobia and racism is, my friend. If you study the history of human evolution, and I realize this is quite a jump, you will see that throughout history there were various species that arrived on planet Earth prior to Homo sapiens, current man, modern man. And as one group came along, it displaced the previous group. We the people are being displaced by the people of Mexico. This is an invasion by any other name. Everybody with a brain understands that. Everybody who understands reality understands we're being pushed out of our own country. 29% of the inmates in federal prisons are illegal aliens. No, Mr. Bush. They do not come all here to work. They all do not come here to work. They're coming to work the system, sell drugs, rape, and kill on contract. Don't lie to us. If I were more than one man, but I am not. I'm only a radio host.
I would organize a march this week where we would burn Mexican flags in the street. And then I'd like to see how our hardworking brethren would react. Our friends from the South. Let us see how they would react.
Okay. John, this guy is a pig.
Well, man, this guy going off about Mexican xenophobia and him telling people to fly the Mexican flag upside down.
To burn it.
Yeah, but he also said hang a Mexican flag upside down at one point. I mean, isn't the whole thing like, you know, hanging an American flag upside down shows extreme distress? You know, the guy's a complete fool.
I don't know that hanging it upside down in Mexico would be an extreme. Michael Savage is actually on the air here locally, and I cannot for the life of me figure out what people like about this guy. And I don't want to, I heard that clip, and the bottom line is that we wanted to put this nut job on the air. Because we want you to see the difference between real people's radio and the crap that they call right-wing radio. That stuff right there is nothing but hate-filled diatribes with no thought required. And what you're told to do is, you know, basically you're given marching orders to go out and to defame other people and to try to create havoc to hate other people. And, so there's your example.
Bloody well put, man.
There's your example.
You know, here you have this guy spewing stuff that's completely false. You know, he's saying that, you know, we're being invaded. Well, who's inviting these people over? Those same corporations that don't want to pay a living wage to an American. So yeah. It's not an invasion from Mexico or from anywhere in Latin America. It's a destruction of the American workforce from within the American and international corporations. And it's a game play. You know, that's all red herring stuff, man. Trying to, raise up his most right-wing, crazy, racist idiots to go out and make it like Mexico is a threat. Please.
You know that
it's not an invading type of mentality. It's much more get along, and I'm sorry, the Mexicans have the great term for it, mi casa su casa, my home is your home.
Sure.
And I think it's just very much that kind of ideal that threatens these idiots. You know,
they also have this afternoon siesta, and I think that that's a wonderful idea.
Absolutely. And then businesses stay open later, though. They stay open later, and there's nightlife that even the kids and the families are involved in, and it's all part of that community feel, which is I think why we saw these people get up and make noise. You know, I'm jealous of them. I'm jealous of the fact that these people who aren't even considered Americans, and they feed every single one of us every day with their labor.
And cleaned up, Ground Zero, for Christ's sake. I mean, you know, what is the difference? I wonder, if we were to really look at the period of time in the early 1900s, before Teddy Roosevelt became president, I wonder how similar it would be with the recent immigrants from Europe coming here and being paid slave wages. And what's going on right now with the immigrants from Latin America? I wonder how similar. It would be.
Well, I have trouble ever seeing white Europeans being marginalized. You know,
well, the Irish, when the Irish came to New York, my friend, they were not treated very well.
Ah, right. Well, there's a different thing. They were actually being, you know, set against by the whole rest of the population. And it happened to the Italians at one point, too. I remember in the 70s and early 80s growing up in New York, man. I couldn't believe it. You know, someone would say the GD Italians while they're eating pizza in their local pizza joint. I mean, how stupid have we gotten?
Xenophobia.
I mean,
you know, this guy Wiener. Now, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, that was Michael the Savage Wiener. I don't know how he says his last name, but you know, anyone that does talk radio and changes their name from Wiener to Michael Savage, what? Okay. I mean, you know. All right, let's You know, John Fox, that's your name. Bruce Birch, that's my name. You know, we ain't got nothing to hide. The bottom line is that we're here for the discourse. We're here to try to create a new conversation. We're not here to tell you how sick we are.
You know? Well, I have a question about that clip, too. He pulled evolution into his argument to back him up.
He certainly did. He fancies himself an anthropologist.
Does he really, or is he just an antique?
I'm sorry, you know, he has a doctorate. You know what? I don't know why we're even talking. But he has a doctorate, and I think it's in nutrition or something like that. I'm being corrected that Wiener is actually pronounced Weiner. I'm thinking either way works.
Wiener, Weiner, 2x4, 2x6.
Wiener. Tomato, tomato, you know, potato, potato, whatever.
But you know,
I know for
I mean,
some people that's, you know, probably important. But
I don't know if you remember before we did the before we got into doing the show and you and I were having our pre-show chat. I told you I went and saw this documentary called What the Bleep? Down the Rabbit Hole.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things that they talk about is that we create our own reality with the influence of our own observation, and also with our own intentions. So we kind of create our own reality. And if you get into the – and I'm just scratching the surface now. If you get into the what happens in quantum physics, this all makes sense. And quantum physics applies to every single thing, you, me, the table, the computer, everything down at the atomic level. And they've actually proven that you can change results and history through back time engineering. And they've proven this. They set up a random number generator, and they decided they wanted to see what happened if no one was observing it. So they set it up an audio version where it was clicks to the right and clicks to the left. And any random number generator will come up with a basic average of all your results, and it's all within a percent or two. So they record this thing with no one, you know, on an analog tape with nobody watching it. They make multiple copies, stick one in a vault. Then they give it to some people to put the intention of more right clicks than left clicks. They go back and play the tape. Sure enough, even the one in the vault had a significant more number of right clicks than left clicks. And it's been repeated over and over and over. Wrap your head around that.
Okay. I'm wrapping.
Now, I want anybody, every one of our listeners. Now, this was just a special showing this week that it was showing here. This documentary was never supposed to make money, and it's made millions. There's some great animation in there. Mary Matlin plays in the drama aspect of it. But you have, you know how we get tied up in politics, power, and religion, right?
Sure.
They open up the film with a newsreel explaining how it used to be that the religious leaders actually went to search the truth. They held the sciences and whatnot, and it was supposed to be religion and science getting together to explain each other. Then at some point, Western Christianity took over and the dogma became law. And we've never stepped back from that point. And a lot of these people who are scientists and physicists are also religious and spiritual people. and they have all come together to realize that it's all the same thing.
I'm being told that it's... I'm sorry, go ahead, John. I was going to say, I'm being told that the website is whatthebleep.com. Whatthebleep.com. Spin their hit counters.
There's a little short there. Check it out. And when you see the short, you're going to want to see this film. There is so much food for thought. Gail and I got back from the film at about 10:30 last night, and I think we're up till almost 4 o'clock in the morning, not able to go to sleep, because there was just so much to talk about. And they talk about how we're all interconnected, right? And the interference and interpolation between all these energies. The entire world needs to come to the realization that we are all connected. And separating one from another is the fundamental issue causing all of the world's problems.
Well, I would tend to concur with that. I mean, you know, we are famous, human beings are famous for separating each other, placing each other into little boxes and saying them and those people and trying to make ourselves, you know, feel superior by, you know, downing others. I mean, to me, we're all in this together, John. That's you know, the premise of this radio program is that we are all in this together, and we need to start acting like it, especially on the left, because one thing on the right, they're lockstep. You know, they have their organization. Now, I don't know that I agree with their type of organization, but they're lockstep. You know, we heard earlier on in the program with Lindsey Graham and Arlen Specter, nailing John Dean because he was a supposed turncoat, even though he was standing for truth and justice. And on the left side, you know, where was the left? The left wasn't there,
mate.
You know, so we have a lot of work cut out for us to try to convince people on the left that it's time to create a new paradigm. Now, But I thank you for that, because I definitely want to see that movie. I think that's going to be an incredible film. I haven't seen it yet, so.
Well, I think it plays a lot into where we all are spiritually on this planet. And this is coming from the agnostic, man. You know, I see a lot of spiritual strife in this world, and I think a lot of it comes from, you know, the factioning and all that other stuff that we've talked about before. But, you know, watch the movie. I'd love to get emails from people after they've seen it. It's something else, but, you know, we're just about out of time, mate. As usual, thank you to Bob Kincaid, our producer, and Agnes Kincaid, our associate producer in West Virginia, who made the show rock and roll along today. Ben Birch at White Rose Society for our stream, our archives, our wonderful moderators, and it's Peter's birthday on Monday. So everybody in the chat room, big hugs and kisses to our buddy Liberal Me Peter over there, because, well, we love him. And, Bruce, if you've got anything else, what do you have happening tomorrow before we run out?
Well, all things reconsidered tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, this very same radio stream. We're going to do, it's going to be an up-for-grabs show. Just dial in and have a conversation with me. Also, just to wrap this thing up and send it on out, this radio program is brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream. Support your union workers, guys. Support your union workers, because that's where the living wage is going to come from.
Absolutely, man.
So, you know, and also, thank you, John. And thank you,
hey,
listeners.
Man, Bruce. Thank you, man. And it's, yeah, I'm hearing music, which means we got to get out of here. So say good day, Bruce.
Good day, Bruce.
All right, people. We actually never even got into talking about how we can fix all this problem with the Democrats. We'll have to get into that next week. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us again this week. Watch your backs. We love you. Check into quantum physics, and we'll see you next week. Out.